don't know what that means. Okay, I think we're going to start. Let me just mute us.
Hello. When do I? Is that?
Yeah. No. I'm good. I'm going to introduce you, and then you can start.
Okay.
Ladies, welcome to our Ineno teleconference. Sheer tonight we have a very special guest. Some of you might recognize him. Might recognize his name because Baruch Hashem, this is the second time he's spoken for us. Rabbi Tovia Vinitsky from Chicago. He was on before another time where he explained to us, I think, the essence of Tehillim. And Rabbi Vinitsky explained to us how Tehillim is the blueprint of the world. And I know that when we had Rabbi Vinitsky on previously, everyone loved it, and it was a very, very, very well-received shiur. And now I tell all my Ineno group leaders, before you start your group, listen to that shiur, and then you will know what to say to explain the koyach of Tehillim. Tonight, we're lucky to have him back. Let me just preface to say that Rabbi Vinitsky gives a very, very popular shiur in Chicago, a Tehillim shiur Sunday night at 8 o'clock, for those of you who live in Chicago and want to join. And the people who attend his shiur love it, and that's how I got to Rabbi Vinitsky, because I heard rave reviews. Tonight, Rabbi Vinitsky is going to speak about the Song of Shira, Perek 19, Yotes. If you could have a Sefer Tehillim in front of you to follow the Shira, I think it would be better, but if not, you'll be able to follow it. So without further ado, Rabbi Vinitsky, please.
Good evening. Thank you very much. That was quite an introduction. I hope I can live up to it. As Mrs. Kapel said, the purpose of learning Tehillim is to understand the message that David HaMelech is trying to get across to us. While it's certainly true that every word and every letter and every verse in Tehillim has a specific meaning, each chapter has a specific idea that David HaMelech wants to get across to us as a blueprint for how we as Jews should live our lives. And tonight what we're doing is chapter 19, Kapitel Yud Tes, which is a song for Shavuos. This particular Kapitel Yud Tes, is been designated by the Vilna Gaon as the capital to say on the day of Shavuos. The Vilna Gaon had a number of shitos, a number of opinions as to what was the correct capital to say for various days of Yomim Tovim, and this was the one that he designated for the holiday of Shavuos. When you first look at this capital, it doesn't seem to be about anything. A lot of times we look at a kapitel, and there's something that prompted David HaMelech to write this particular kapitel. It's about something. It has some sort of topic. It has some sort of idea or structure to it that sort of jumps out. Kapitel Yud Tes is simply David HaMelech praising the works of Hashem. And there doesn't seem to be any overriding theme that really ties this together, let alone why it should be the kapitel, the chapter designated as the one most like the holiday of Shavuos. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the kapitel, we're going to go through it, and hopefully by the end we'll have a little bit better idea, and then what I'll try and do is I'll try and tie it together as to how that should influence our upcoming holiday of Shavuos and our avoda for that yontif. So the first pasuk Aleph, verse 1, says, Lamanatseach mizmor l'David, for the conductor, a mizmor from David. Before the conductor is a common way that Kapitelach open, Lamanatseach, and most likely Lamanatseach means almost exactly what it says. We have to remember that Tehillim were sung from the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. The Levim sang, Kohanim played instruments, right, and that there were conductors, there were arrangers, there were all kinds of people involved in orchestrating the performance of the various kapitelach. And Lamanach Tzeach, for the conductor, probably is exactly what it says. An instruction for the conductor, whoever was conducting this particular kapitel from the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. Mizmor LaDavid, it's a psalm written by David. We have two kinds of Mizmor LaDavids in Tehillim. We have LaDavid Mizmor, and we have Mizmor LaDavid. And there's about the same number of Mizmor LaDavids as there are LaDavid Mizmors. However, they mean two very different things. In our kapitel, it says Mizmor LaDavid, which means a psalm that was written by David. He's written it, and he's written it for the benefit of other people. When the Tehillim says LaDavid Mizmor, it's something that David wrote in order to encourage himself. LaDavid Mizmor was something to encourage himself, and our Kapitel Mizmor LaDavid is something that David wrote to encourage others. So we start off with a relatively common introductory verse that says Lamanatzeach Mizmor LaDavid, for the conductor, a psalm that was written by David. In verse 2 in Pasuk Beis, David HaMelech says, Hashemayim Misaprim Kavod Kael, the heavens declare the glory of Hashem, Umaisei Yadav Magid HaRakia, and his handiwork is proclaimed by the heavens. Now, the heavens declare the glory of Hashem. Obviously, the sun, the moon, the stars, and the heavenly bodies, they don't speak. But the heavenly bodies inspire man to praise Hashem. What David HaMelech means by the fact that his handiwork is proclaimed by the firmament is that if you stop and you look at the way the world works, the way the planets, the stars, the solar system works, it's a thing of precision, a thing of beauty. And the Radak says that the planets, as they orbit each other, it's almost like they're speaking. It's almost like a language. Their orbits are so precise, and everything that goes on in the heavens is so precise and so organized that it declares the glory of Hashem. And in fact, this goes so far that the Ibn Ezra actually encouraged people to study astronomy in order to appreciate Hashem's works. Now, what's interesting about this is that it can have an unintended consequence as well. The Rambam asks a very famous question, and he says, how is it that people came to worship idols? Worshipping idols would seem to be a very silly thing to do. To have a statue, a piece of wood, or some sort of representation and bow down to this and say, this is a shadow, that seems like a nonsensical. How does an intelligent, thinking person come to become an idol worshiper? And the Rambam says it happens almost naturally. Because what happened was exactly what David HaMelech says in this pasuk. Hashemayim Misaprim Kavod Kael. People saw the glory of Hashem reflected in the amazing, amazing things they saw in the heavens. And they said, well, you know what? Hashem created the planets. Hashem created the stars. So we should say and sing the praises of the heavens, and that will also be giving praise to Hashem. By saying how Hashem created all of these wonderful things in the heavens, that'll be praising Hashem. And what happened is, over the generations, people of lesser understanding thought that they were actually praising the stars and the planets, and that the stars and the planets had some sort of power on their own. And eventually, if stars and planets have a power on their own, then lights and everything else has a power on their own, and it degenerated into an Avodah Zorah, to the idol worshiping that we're so familiar with. However, David HaMelech says that the purpose of the heavens is to declare the glory of Hashem. That if you study astronomy and you see how the universe is put together, it's impossible not to be in awe of Hashem. He goes on in the next verse to say, Yom li yom yabia oimer, day following day utters speech, v'layla l'layva yechavidas, and night follows night and conveys knowledge. The word yabia is translated oftentimes, and I see it's translated here in the Art Scroll Tehillim as utters. Rashi translates yabia as flows. That a proper translation of this verse would be the day follows day flowing speech, and night follows night conveying knowledge. Day following day and night following night is attributing to Hashem the idea that the world is created in patterns. The world is not a random gathering of bodies put together. Yom li yom yabia omer. Each day follows another day. And each night conveys knowledge and follows the night before it. That the world is set up in an orderly system to follow a certain pattern, and that Hashem set everything up in such a way for an observer to look and be able to discern that there's a creator in the world. At the end of every day comes night, and at the end of every night comes another day. Hashem set that up so that a person can look and can see, look, the world has a creator, and the creator gave the world a certain pattern to it. Ein omer ve'ein devarim, he says in the next verse, b'li nishma kolam. There is no speech and there is no words unheard in their sound. If a person really can appreciate the world around them, the depth of which they can achieve that appreciation is undescribable. There's no speech and no words, David HaMelech says. The author of Tehillim cannot come up with the words to properly describe the incredible creation of the universe. And how much awe it brings in me, he says, to look at Hashem's world. I can't come up with the words for that, he says. He goes on in verse 5 to say, B'chol ha'aretz yatsa kavam. The earth goes out in precision, uviktze sevil melehem, and to the end of the world there it reaches, lashemesh sam ohel bahem, and he has set up a tent for the sun in their midst. The tent for the sun, I think we would probably call in modern terminology an atmosphere. What David HaMelech is describing here is that around each of these amazing bodies that Hashem has created in the universe, there are what David HaMelech is calling tents, which are our air and gas and things that we with our scientific knowledge would probably call atmosphere and gravity and things like that. David HaMelech has said it's a tent for the sun. Right? What Hashem has done, he set up a tent for the sun. He says, "V'hu kechasan yotze mechupaso." He says in verse 6, and it's like a groom going out from his chuppah, yasi's kegibor larutz arach, and like a warrior running the course. The sun is like a groom, he says. Everybody rejoices when you see the sun. You know, nighttime, especially before the advent of electric lights, was such a stark contrast to daytime. You know, right now you can leave the lights on all night and the sun comes up in the morning and it's not all that much different than it was in the night. But until recently, that really wasn't true. The dramatic difference in the world in general when the sun came up was tremendous. And David HaMelech says, just like when you have a chasana and the groom goes out from the chuppah, everybody's happy and rejoices that. He says, that's like it is when the sun comes up. Everybody's happy when the sun comes up. Right? No matter what, the sun comes up, it's another day. We can go on. Right? We're renewed. We feel a new sense of vigor and in renewal, and we can go on. Right, it's like a chosan coming out from the chuppah. It says, "Mikzei Hashemayim otzah sekupaso al kitzo sam." The end of the heavens is the source, and the circuit is the other end. Ve'ein nistar mechamaso, and nothing is hidden from its heat. Now, David HaMelech here says the sun is producing heat, rather than saying that it's producing light. Because heat is something that you cannot escape from. It affects all of the surroundings. To say the sun gives light is true, but light is something that you can avoid or you can hide from. Light is something that if you step inside, you don't necessarily see the light anymore. Heat is something that's all-pervasive. David HaMelech is saying nothing. The heat of the sun can penetrate anything. The heat of the sun is something that a person cannot avoid no matter what. Now, up until now, David HaMelech in this kapitel has been praising the wonders of creation, as we would call it, what Hashem created in the universe at large. Now, for the rest of the kapitel, he's going to switch gears a little bit, and instead of praising the creation of the world itself, he's going to praise Hashem's Torah. So he's going to switch gears a little bit, and he's going to start in verse 8 in Pasuk Ches by saying, Toras Hashem Temima, the Torah of Hashem is perfect, Meshivas Nafesh, it restores the soul, Edus Hashem Nemana, Makim Es Pesi, the testimony of Hashem is believable and trustworthy, and the simple people become wise. Now, besides the fact that this is makes a terrific song on Yontif, there's a lot to be said in this verse here. The Torah of Hashem is perfect. Right? It restores the soul. Means that Torah is always beneficial for a person. There's no such thing as anything or any occurrence or any connection or anything having anything to do with the shamanist Torah not being perfect for a person. There's no such thing as anything that derives from a Hashem's Torah as being less than perfect. When we say Torah is Hashem Tamima, the Torah of Hashem is perfect. You know, it sounds simple. Okay, the Torah is perfect. It's not missing anything. But it's speaking on a much greater level than that. The Torah of Hashem is perfect, right, in that it's perfect for everybody in every situation at every time under every circumstances. There's no such thing as any time, place, or circumstances where the Torah does not have the perfect answer and the perfect connection and the perfect idea and the perfect source for any particular person. Eidus Hashem Nemona. The testimony of Hashem is believable. The testimony of Hashem are the mitzvos. And they make a simple person wise. By following the mitzvos, even the most simple person who has very little understanding of the ways of the world becomes wise. By studying the Torah and following its mitzvahs, makimis pesi, it makes a simple person wise. David HaMelech goes on to say, Pikudi Hashem Yisharim, the instructions, the orders of Hashem are upright and righteous. Mesamche lev, they gladden the heart. Mitzvah Hashem bara, the command of Hashem is clear. Me'ir asanayim, enlightening the eyes. What this means that the orders of Hashem are upright. It's gladdening the heart. The command of Hashem is clear and it lightens the eyes. A person, a wise person, says David HaMelech, is one who knows to rejoice when his intellect steers his passions. The Radak explains this verse to mean that David HaMelech is trying to get across the point as follows. We know in our minds that Hashem's Torah is perfect. We know, and we've been taught all of our lives, that Hashem's Torah is perfect, and everything in the Torah is perfect, and whatever the Torah says is perfect, and we should do whatever it says. But people are not just comprised of intellect. People are comprised of emotions and passions. And one's emotions and one's passions often tend to get the better of one in life. Says the Radak, what David HaMelech is talking about here is that a person who feels really, really good about themselves is one who is able to take that knowledge that the Torah is perfect and control his passions and emotions and subject them to the dictates of the Torah. That's a person who me'iras enayim. His eyes have become enlightened from the Torah. That's how the Radak explains what that means. David HaMelech then says, Yiras Hashem tahara. The fear of Hashem is perfect, omedes la'ad, and it endures forever. Mishpatei Hashem emes, the judgments of Hashem are true, tzadku yachtov, and they're altogether righteous. The fear of Hashem is pure. The fear of Hashem is talking about observing what the lavim, the prohibitions, the negative commandments of the Torah. Generally, people tend to allow fear of something to stop them from doing something. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, take a small child, and their parents say, if you touch that, you're going to be punished. Wow, that might stop the child from doing that, because the child has a certain fear of contradicting the instructions from their parents. However, if the parents tell the child, don't touch that, because we're your parents and we love you and we really don't want you to, they don't instill any fear in the child. Is the child likely to really be listening as closely and to pay as much attention as he would out of fear? So says David HaMelech, Yiras Hashem Tahara. Don't think that fear is a bad thing. The fear of Hashem and the fear of punishment is Tahara. That's a good thing. You should be afraid of doing something wrong, says David HaMelech. There's no reason why fear is a bad thing. You know, it used to be very popular that everybody doesn't want to, we don't want to scare our children. We want to be their friends. We want to help them. And you know what? Sometimes it's good to put a little bit of what they call the fear of heaven into the children. You know, if you do this, you'll be in big trouble. Says David HaMelech, there's nothing wrong with that same approach sometimes to the commandments in the Torah that you're not supposed to do. Yiras Hashem Tahara. There's nothing wrong with not doing something because the Torah says not to and you're scared to do it. Omed is La'ad. That stands forever. That's a good thing, says David HaMelech. There's nothing wrong with that. Mishpatei Hashem emesod kuyachtav, and the judgments of Hashem are true and they're righteous altogether. But HaMelech is telling us as follows. In the Torah covers a wide variety of legal circumstances, for lack of a better term. The Torah covers everything from civil law to personal law to marital law. Everything about a person's life is governed by laws in the Torah. And yet, no two laws in the Torah ever conflict with each other. Contrast that with a man-made system of laws. If you go to court today in the United States, what you're getting is a combination of British common law and a whole bunch of other things that have come together to form what is a body of law in the United States. If you ask a judge to rule on the body of law in this United States, a lot of times he'll find there's conflicting laws. Well, we have this on one and this, and they seem to conflict with each other. So we have to have a Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has to decide, okay, well, we're going to follow this law instead of that one. Because man-made laws, by nature, can't be what David HaMelech is calling emes and tzedek, true and righteous. The only thing that can be true and righteous are laws that are created by Hashem. Since Hashem created the world, he knows how to create a system of laws that aren't going to contradict one another. So David HaMelech, that's Sadkuyachtov, the righteous altogether. Goes on to say, the Nechmadi Mizahav, they're more desirable than gold, Umipazrav, right, even a great amount of gold, Umasuki Midvash Venofes Tsufim, and sweeter than honey and drippings from the comb. Right? They're more desirable than gold. Well, David HaMelech is not telling us anything new here. He's telling us what we have all heard phrased as, you can't take it with you. Despite what the pharaohs tried in ancient Egypt, you can't take it with you. No matter how much gold you have, after death, the only thing that goes with you is your mitzvahs. Gam avdecha nizhar bahem. In Pasuk 12, he says, indeed, your servant is scrupulous in the mitzvahs. B'shamram ekev rav. And in observing them, there is great reward. Now, David is saying your servant is scrupulous in them. He's referring to himself. He's referring to himself as a scrupulous person, right? And he's referring to himself as avdecha, a servant. Now, there's a real interesting point here. David HaMelech does not refer to himself as one of the Chachamim, as one of the wise people, as one of the judges of the time. He refers to himself as Avdecha. I'm your Eved. I'm your servant. To David HaMelech, there is no greater level of accomplishment than being Avdecha, than being a servant and serving Hashem. To be an Eved Hashem, as we say, is David HaMelech's highest goal. So while people like to throw around praises and talk about people who are chachamim and who are wise and who are a pikeach and all kinds of great praises, David HaMelech doesn't bring any of that into play for himself. He says, you know what I am? And I'm honest about myself, he says. I'm a very accomplished person, says David HaMelech. And you know what that makes me? I want to be Avdecha. I want to be your servant, Hashem. And I want to be scrupulous in the mitzvahs. And in observing them, there will be a great reward. Most of the Mefarshim explain the great rewards. I mean, the David HaMelech is talking about at the end of one's life, one will receive a great reward in the next world, in Olam Haba, for the mitzvahs that one has observed by being Avdecha, by being an Eved Hashem. I want you to keep in mind that idea of an Eved Hashem, that David HaMelech wants to be Avdecha, because we're going to come back to that a little bit later. In verse 13 in Yud Gimel, David HaMelech says, Shigios mi yavin, who can see mistakes? Ministaros nakeni, from unperceived faults, please cleanse me, Hashem. Mistakes, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, the mistakes he's talking about here are through mistakes that people make through imperfect understanding. You know, even when a person tries to do what Hashem wants, sometimes we try, and our motivations are sincere and proper, but we make a mistake. We think that what we should be doing is X, when really what we should be doing is Y. But we didn't do X because we wanted to go against what Hashem wanted. We did X because we misunderstood. We thought it was the proper thing to do. Now only later in hindsight do we realize it was a mistake. So says David HaMelech, you know what? Save me from that, Hashem. I want to be Avdecha. I want to try and do the right thing. So save me from thinking that I'm doing the right thing when really I'm not. Also, he says in the next verse in Yud Dalet, Gam, also, Mizeidin Chasuch Avdecha, from intentional sins restrain me also. Al Yim Shaluvi, don't let them rule over me. Don't let my passions get control of me. Az Esam, and then I'll be perfect. V'nikesi be pesha rav, and I'll be cleansed of transgression. So first, David HaMelech says, I want to be your servant, so help me with those things that I think I'm doing right. Don't let me stumble because I'm doing the wrong thing, but my intentions are right. And also shield me from sins, right? Take away the temptation from me. Now, those of you who have studied Tanakh know that David HaMelech led a tremendously tortured life. And it's very hard to learn Tehillim or learn Nach in general without an understanding of David HaMelech's life. His life was one of great trials, tribulations, and oppressions for much of his life, all of which he managed to overcome, except for one or two. And perhaps another time we'll have a topic about that. But David HaMelech says, Az Esam, if you'll help me, Hashem, if you'll guard me from things where I think I'm doing the right thing, and if you'll help me make sure that my passions don't be at the better of me, then I'll be cleansed, I won't have great transgressions, and I'll really be able to be Avdecha, I'll really be able to be your servant. Because your Torah is so perfect that it gives me the blueprint. He concludes with a verse that is probably familiar to all of us. He says in Tesvav, Yehu l'ratzon imri fi, and they find favor, the words of my mouth, the hegyon libi lefanecha, and the thoughts of my heart before you, Hashem tzuri v'goali, Hashem my rock and my redeemer. Now we say this verse at the end of Shemona Esrei, at the end of the tefillah, at the end of prayer, at the end of the Amida, we say this verse that says, may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart find favor before you, Hashem. Now, it seems to me that this would really be better to say before one davens. You're asking Hashem that what I'm about to say, I hope will find favor with you, Hashem. And we say it at the end of davening. That seems to not make sense. Why is it that Chazal, why is it that the Chachamim, the sages of old, instituted that we should say this at the end of davening? So already that question is asked in the Talmud. The Talmud asks that question, and it gives the following answer. There are 18 blessings, there are 18 brachos in the Shemona Esrei, in the Amida that we say every day. David HaMelech put this verse at the end of the 18th chapter of Tehillim, and therefore he was giving us, he was alluding to the fact that we should say it after our 18 prayers of the Amida Shemona Esrei, just like he put it at the end of 18 chapters of Tehillim. Now, that's a great answer, but there's a couple problems here. The first is, those of you who were listening will notice that we're learning chapter 19, not 18. So that would seem to be a bit of a problem, because the Talmud would seem to have lost the ability to count here. So the truth is that in the days of the Talmud, there were also, they also counted 150 chapters of Tehillim, just as we do now. However, what we call chapter 1 and 2 were all one chapter. If you ever notice, chapter 2 of Tehillim is one of the few chapters that does not start with any introductory verse. There's no Laman Atzeich, there's no Ashrei Ish, there's no Mizmor LeDavid, there's no nothing that could be considered an introductory verse whatsoever, which is very unusual. And that's because, as I'll tell us, it was all one chapter, chapter 1 and 2. And it, for another time, there is a discussion that even though that there is a one other place, there are two places where we count the 150 chapters slightly different than they did in the times of the Talmud. And that's one of the places, one of the two places, is that they consider that to be one long chapter. So why is it that we split it? So we seem to be completely mixed up here. First of all, we're asking Hashem, in this verse in the end of chapter 19, to please accept what we're about to daven. Except we say it at the end of davening. So the Talmud says, well, that's okay. You know why we say it at the end of davening? There are 18 blessings in davening. And David HaMelech said this at the end of 18 chapters. So you see, it sort of fits. Except it's 19 chapters. Ah, well, really, it was 18 in those days. Okay. How many blessings are there in our Amidah today? Those of you who will quickly grab a sitter and count will notice that there are 19. We call it the Shemona Esrei. We call it the prayer of 18. And there are 19 blessings. Maybe it's we that don't know how to count. So after the original 18 blessing Amida, years later, centuries later, a 19th blessing was added. That 19th blessing that was added as a blessing to protect us from the minim, and it made our Shemona Esrei, our Amida, actually have 19 blessings. We never changed the name of it. We still call it Shemona Esrei because that was the original enactment of the sages. So the Marashah very beautifully says, you know what? Let me explain it to you. He says, originally there were 18 blessings. We counted the chapter 1 as one long chapter, and David HaMelech concluded these words at the end of 18 blessings. Once we had 19 blessings in the Shemona Esrei, somehow or other the Jews understood that this should be 19th chapter, and we started counting chapter 1 and 2 as two separate chapters. So it became that this is the end of the 19th chapter, just like we have now 19 blessings. So we say at the end of our 19 blessings in the Amidah, the same thing that David HaMelech said at the end of his 19th chapter, which is, may the words that I've of my mouth and the thoughts of my hearts before you, Hashem, find favor, you're my rock and my redeemer. And that concludes chapter 19, Kapitel Yud Tes, that David HaMelech has to say. It almost seems... almost, and you can't really go this far, but it almost seems like these verses are strung together almost one after another without a strong connection. Most of the kapitulach that we've learned together in my shir, or that we have learned together elsewhere, you'll see that there's a thread going through the entire kapitul. Even though at first it may be a little hard to discern, you'll see that everything is built in a certain order. Here it almost seems like David HaMelech keeps putting together verses of praise, and then he stops and concludes. So David HaMelech is really getting at something much more than this, because remember that the Vilna Gaon said this is the psalm for Shavuos. I don't know. If I were picking a psalm for Shavuos, I'd picture something about, you know, giving the Torah and the Aharon. So how does the Vilna Gaon get this? He gets this because there is no avoda for Shavuos. There is nothing that we do on Shavuos. Pretty soon it's going to be Shavuos, and what are we going to do? So the men are going to stay up all night and learn, and we're going to have some yummy cheesecake maybe. And what? On Pesach, we have more things to do than we can possibly count. All right, between the matzah and between the seder and getting rid of all the chametz, there's definitely an avoda. There's what to do for Pesach. I think every woman right now in this conference could agree there's what to do to get ready for Pesach. Come Sukkot time, we have three big holidays, three Shalosh Regalim, the big three. We have Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. At Sukkot time, oh my gosh, we have a sukkah. We have a lulav and esrog. We have all kinds of things that we're doing here. We have things that we do on the holiday that are actions to commemorate what the holiday is about. So come Shavuos, and we do basically nothing. I wouldn't say cheesecake is nothing, actually, but basically nothing. How is that possible? What happened to Shavuos? Shavuos, the anniversary of the giving of the Torah? How could there be a holiday with more importance than that, and yet we don't have anything to do on it? So says the Vilna Gaon, this capital, this chapter, gives us the avoda of what we're supposed to be doing on Shavuos. Now, let's read all the Pesukim again, and I still don't see what it is we're supposed to be doing on Shavuos. So says the Vilna Gaon, we're supposed to be appreciating. Okay? We're supposed to be appreciating. The way one has a Shavuos is one appreciates. And there's two kinds of appreciation, a physical appreciation and a spiritual appreciation. So bear with me for a moment, and I think you'll see how this fits in with the kapitel that we have just gone through right now. The physical appreciation is that a person has to appreciate that which he has. Now, there was an avoda at Shavuos time. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, there was the bringing of the Bikurim, the bringing of the first fruits. We tend to forget about that. Shavuos is called Chag HaBikurim, amongst many of its names. A farmer had to take the first fruits that grew from his land, and he had to bring them to Yerushalayim, and he had to give them and bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, and he had to do it at Shavuos, to bring these fruits in appreciation that Hashem gave him the produce and the products and the bounty of the land. We today, most of us live in cities, we have a hard time understanding this. Go to Eretz Yisrael and ask the farmers who keep Shemitah what it's like, what the feeling is like when those crops come up from the ground. But before you can do anything with those crops, you have to take them to Yerushalayim on Shavuos, and you have to give the first part of them has to go to Hashem in appreciation. This was a huge thing. It's hard for us to imagine in our times what it was like to be what's called Ole Regel, to go up to Yerushalayim for the three festivals. I don't know if I can paint a picture, and I don't even know if I myself can adequately visualize it, let alone describe it. But all the Jews came to Yerushalayim. Everybody came. Now you're saying, well, everybody came. Everybody came. The soldiers who were guarding the borders of Eretz Yisrael came to Yerushalayim. So you say, who guarded the borders? Hashem. All the years that the Jews were Ole Regel to Yerushalayim, no enemy ever attacked them while the guards were gone from the border. Open miracles all every time this happened. And if you study Nach at all, you will see that Israel was surrounded by enemies. With the Plishtim, the Aramim, every one of these enemies would, given half a chance, overrun Israel in a minute. Yet the borders were completely unguarded when they went to be Ole Regel. Nothing ever happened. Not so much as a skirmish. Everybody went. all the houses were opened. Everybody housed everybody. Everybody fed everybody. And they all came together with an achdus that's almost impossible for us to imagine. When they brought up the Bikurim, the Rambam describes it as I'll quote you a couple descriptions from the Rambam. The inhabitants of the smaller villages would all gather in a central town so they could go to Yerushalayim together. Because it says in Mishle, many people give glory to the king. They slept in the streets, and at the dawn, the leader would call out, "Arise, it is time to go to Tzion, to Hashem." An ox walked before them. Its horns were plated with gold, and an olive wreath was placed on its head to show that Bikurim are brought only from the 7 species of fruit for which the land of Israel is praised. A flute was played before them as they approached Yerushalayim. Throughout the journey, they recited the verse from Tehillim, "I rejoiced when they said to me, 'Let us go to the house of the Lord.'" That's a verse from Kapitel Chaf Lamed Beis. "They journeyed for 2/3 of the day and rested 1/3 of the day. When they approached Yerushalayim, they prepared and adorned their Bikurim. If they had both fresh and dried fruit, they placed the fresh on top. The inhabitants of Yerushalayim went out to greet them. When they entered the gates of Yerushalayim, they declared," the next pasuk from that same kapitel in Tehillim, "our feet are standing within your gates, O Yerushalayim." All of the artisans and craftsmen and workers of Yerushalayim stood in their honor and greeted them, "Our brothers, inhabitants of such and such in town, welcome to Yerushalayim in peace." They proceeded through Yerushalayim, accompanied by flute playing, until they reached the Beis HaMikdash. They lifted their baskets to their shoulders, and they recited another pasuk from Tehillim, praised be Hashem in His holiness, may everyone praise Hashem." They walked to the Beis HaMikdash courtyard, and as they walked, the Levim sang a song, "I will exalt you, Hashem, for you have lifted me up." Millions of people doing this. You couldn't eat that produce until you went to Yerushalayim to show that it was Hashem that gave this to you. If you didn't have appreciation and you didn't show Hashem that you appreciated what it was, you weren't doing what you were supposed to do on Shavuos. But there's one more little knach, little twist to the physical appreciation. And that is that after all this, the Mishnah says as follows. There are people who are mevi vekore, and there are people who are mevi ve'eno kore. There are people who bring and read, and there are people who bring and don't read. Because there's one more step to the bringing of Bikurim. The halacha is that when you bring your Bikurim, you have to give the Bikurim and you have to read. You have to read from the Parsha in Devarim, and you have to read, it's a few paragraphs, and it says the history of the fact that Hashem brought us out of Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael and gave us the land, and you have to read these paragraphs out loud as you give over your Bikurim. Now, the Mishnah says there are people that bring, and they read the paragraphs. That's the law. It says there are people that bring, and they can't read. There were certain people that weren't allowed to read. For example, a convert. For example, there were other people that, for whatever reason, the description of the land being given to them in these paragraphs did not apply. So they still had a mitzvah to bring the Bikurim, but the Mishnah says, Eino Kore, they weren't allowed to read. And they were devastated. The reason I just told you all about the pomp and circumstance and ceremony and everything that went along with bringing the Bikurim was to tell you that this last sentence, the most devastating thing was for someone who could bring but wasn't allowed to read. How could that be? What we just said here, it's phenomenal. All right, this whole thing, you know what? Because they couldn't express verbally their appreciation to Hashem for the Bikurim that they brought. They could bring it, and you could see that they were expressing their appreciation, but they weren't allowed to verbally express their physical appreciation for that which Hashem had given them. They could only bring, but they weren't allowed to read. Now, for what I just described, it sounds like a pretty awesome celebration. I think that any one of us here would be quite happy and quite uplifted to partake in such a celebration with the Bikurim. But says the Mishnah, if you couldn't read, it was very sad. Because you couldn't finish the Avoda of Shavuos, showing the physical appreciation, the appreciation for the physical things that Hashem gave us. You couldn't say out loud, thank you, Hashem, for giving me this land. You could still bring the Bikurim. You have to appreciate the physicality, to appreciate the physical things that Hashem gives us. That's why they wanted to be a kore, a reader. They wanted to be a mevi and a kore. The physical part of appreciation, there are two parts to appreciation, appreciating the physical and appreciating the spiritual. Appreciating the physical is wanting to be a kore, wanting to express your appreciation to Hashem for all of the things that he done. Just like David HaMelech is doing in this kapitel. The appreciation, you should just be bursting out of you. The person comes through all this pomp. The people, the flutes are playing and the people are standing up for them and they come and they're sad because they can't say out loud their appreciation. That's the Avoda of Shavuos, says the Vilna Gaon, right? You know why? Appreciation. You appreciate the physical things. Not enough just to show it. Yeah, you know, I appreciate it. I write a check to Tzedakah. Right? No, it should be bursting out of you. You want to be a kore. You want to be a reader. You want to be able to say those pesukim that show how much I appreciate the physical things that he does. That's one thing you have to appreciate. The second thing you have to appreciate is what Hashem does for you spiritually. That's a completely different thing. What Hashem does for you spiritually is that he gives you the Torah. Now, that, we say that sentence so many times, over and over again. You know, Hashem gave us the Torah, Hashem gave us the Torah, that I think sometimes it loses the idea of what it even means. You know, Hashem created the entire world for one purpose. That one purpose is to give someone the Torah. Hashem is good, and he wanted to share his goodness and his love with someone. And that someone is the Bnei Yisrael. Hashem gave us the Torah. Torah is not just a rule book to live by. It is a rule book to live by, but it's not just a rule book to live by. It's a book that has in it the will of Hashem. What the one who created the world and who keeps all existence going, how he wants you to conduct yourself in order that you can receive his love. That's what the Torah is. There's a famous vort from, I think it's Rabbeinu Yona, maybe. He says that the Talmud in the Dorim says something incredible, based on a verse in the Navi and the prophet Yirmiyahu. It says that one of the reasons that the land of Israel was destroyed when the Jews were sent into exile, why did the land have to be destroyed? Right, the land was destroyed. It couldn't be fertile anymore. The land was terrible. I mean, until our times when we refertilized the land of Israel. It was used to be the most fertile place in the entire world. Land was desolate. It was destroyed. And it says because the Jews abandoned Torah. The Talmud, the Rabbi, can't understand this. Nobody abandoned Torah. They had the base of Mikdash. They learned day and night. We're talking about the days of Chazal, the days of the Chachamim, the days of the greatest sages of Israel. No one abandoned Torah. So he says, you know what it is? They didn't say properly the bracha on learning Torah in the morning. So Thomas says, what do you mean they didn't say the bracha properly? Of course they said the bracha. You think they didn't say the bracha? Yeah, says Rabbeinu. They said the bracha. But you know what? They didn't realize, all right, how they didn't think that learning Torah and the fact that they had the Torah was so amazing that it just burst out of them that they wanted to say a bracha. They said a bracha because they opened the rule book, and the rule book says in the morning you say a bracha on Torah. So that's why they said a bracha. Because they didn't appreciate what they were saying a bracha over, and they didn't appreciate what Hashem was giving them, the land of Israel was destroyed, said the Talmud. The Izbitzer Rebbe says something so interesting. There's a case in the Talmud as follows. Reuven bought a piece of metal. Now he buys a piece of metal, and this metal is made out of lead. And for the sake of argument, let's say he paid 50 cents for this piece of metal that's made out of lead. Now he sells it to Shimon for $1. Everybody's happy. Reuven made 50 cents. Shimon has a nice piece of metal for $1. Shimon takes the piece of metal home, and he scrapes off the metal, and he sees underneath it is solid silver. The thing is worth a fortune. It's a $10,000 piece of item here. Well, naturally, Reuven hears about that. You can't keep news like that, huh? Reuven takes him to court and says, hey, I sold this to you for $1. It's worth $10,000. If I'd have known it was worth $10,000, you know what? We need to make a new deal over here. Shimon says, hey, too bad for you. So they go to court. And you know what the court says? Shimon gets to keep it for $1 because Reuven didn't know what he had. And if you don't know what you have, you can't appreciate it, and you can't get any benefit from it. That's the halacha when it comes to buying and selling metal. Says the Ishbitzer Rebbe, that's the halacha of Torah also. In order to really get benefit, you have to appreciate what you have. If the Torah is a rule book to you, and it's just something that you look up what to do and when to say brachas and when to this, so you know what, that's all you get. You get the metal pipe. But if you see the Torah is literally Hashem giving over to you kaviyachol part of his own being, it's worth silver. Then you know what you have, and you're going to get the appropriate value for it. Appreciation comes in two forms. Appreciation for the physical, and appreciation for the spiritual. Now let's get back to our kapitel. David HaMelech says, I put together all these pesukim, all these verses of praise, and not only praise, but appreciation. And he says, because of this, I want to be avdecha. I told you to keep that in mind. I want to be an Eved Hashem. I want to serve Hashem. How is he serving Hashem in this kapitel? What's he doing over here? I don't see any mitzvahs happening. I don't see anybody putting up, I don't see anything happening over here. You know what's happening over here? He's doing Shavuos. He's appreciating that which Hashem gave him. He's appreciating the creation of the world, the physical things that Hashem gave him, and he's appreciating the Torah, the spiritual things that Hashem gave him. He's doing appreciation. It says the Vilna Gaon, that's why this is the kapitel for Shavuos. Because on Shavuos, what a person is supposed to do is try and become an Eved Hashem. How many times have we heard the rabbi give a beautiful drasha, we should all be an Eved Hashem and want to serve Hashem. And we all leave the beautiful drasha saying, oh, terrific, I'm going to run out right now and I'm going to be an Eved Hashem. How exactly do you do that? Which corner do you stop at first? The answer is, to be an Eved Hashem, you work on appreciation. You work on appreciating what Hashem gave you and realizing that everything that Hashem gave you is to help you. And that's how you become an Eved Hashem, says David HaMelech. You work on those appreciation things. Now, I have to add one more thing about being an Eved Hashem. And that is that an Eved Hashem has two words to it. Eved and Hashem. It seems to me that one of the things we have to do in our Shavuos working on appreciation is remember which word is which. We're an Eved of Hashem. The emphasis is on Eved. The emphasis is on that we are a servant of Hashem. Meaning, what does a servant do? A servant does what his master wants. And then his master can thus bestow good things onto the servant. Sometimes when we want to be an Eved Hashem, we want to figure out what we want to do. You know, servants don't do that. David says, I want to be your servant. That's the highest thing I could do. Servants watch out for their master. I heard a phenomenal story that I have to share with you that illustrates this, and it may be slightly off point, and if so, you'll forgive me, but it's about being an Eved Hashem and putting Hashem's first. There was a famous author, a Sephardi author, in the 1700s, I believe, called the Sadeh Chemed. The Sadeh Chemed wrote an encyclopedic work, literally in alphabetical order, of every topic covered in the Talmud. Now, today we have something called the Encyclopedia Talmudis, the Talmudic Encyclopedia. And they have a machon, and they have a staff, and they have this. Day Chaim had a pen and a piece of paper. He never forgot anything he learned in his entire life. At the end of his life, he wrote a huge encyclopedia of everything in the Talmud, A to Z, with all the details, and he did it all from memory. When the Sadei Chabad was on his deathbed, his Talmidim, his students, came to him, and they said, Rebbe, help us. How can you remember everything? Why is it that you remember everything you ever learned? I learned something last week, I don't remember it. The Sadei Chabad said, well, actually, there was an incident, and I'll tell you. When I was a young man, he said, I came to a certain city. I forgot the name of the city. He came to this city to learn in the kollel that was in this city. Now, in those days, kollels did not have fundraisers that traveled around the country and raised monies for them, but they were supported by one or two rich individuals in the town. So in this particular town, there was a rich individual, a certain man, and he paid for the kollel. He gave a stipend to the guys to learn, paid for their food, their books, etc. So they needed another guy. So the Sadei Chabad came. He was a young fellow. He soon became the very best student in the kollel. He learned with such concentration and diligence, it was incredible. And that made everybody happy, except for one person. The one person that didn't make so happy was the guy who used to be the number one student. And the guy who used to be the number one student was very jealous of the Sadei Chabad. And he did something, topic for another time, how a person could even do this. He went and he hired a non-Jewish maid to spread a rumor that she and the Sadei Chabad had been illicitly involved, and to spread this rumor all over town. Well, you can imagine what that did to the Sadei Chabad's reputation. All of a sudden, he's the best student in the kollel. Next thing you know, if there's one thing the Jews like to do, it's they like to talk. Next thing you know, the Sadei Chabad is the bum of the town. So the rich individual who's supporting the kollel figures he's got to go, he's got to clear this up. He goes into the base medrash, to the study hall where they're learning, and he goes over to the Sadei Chabad. He's going to ask him, what's going on here? He stands next to the Sadei Chabad, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. The Sadei Chabad is so involved in his learning, he doesn't even notice that the guy is there. The rich individual supporting the kollel says, you know what? It is impossible that a person like that, such a God-fearing person, could have been involved in this incident. Well, the matter's closed. Well, the matter wasn't quite closed, because a couple of weeks later, the non-Jewish maid came to the Sadei Chabad and said, I have a problem. Now I can't get work. How about we go together to this rich individual's house, and I'll tell him the truth, and we'll clear up your name. The Sadei Chabad thought, oh, gewaldig, that's terrific. Clear up my name. So we go, he goes, and they walk up the steps to the individual's house. And one step before the top, the Sadei Chabad stops, and he turns back around, and he walks back down the stairs with the non-Jewish maid, and he takes and buys her a train ticket and gets her a job in another city, and he never tells the individual about what really happened, ever. So now on his deathbed, the Sadei Chabad says, you know what, from that moment on, I never forgot a thing that I was learning. Because when I went up those stairs, I was thinking, what's best for me? I've got to clear my name. When I hit the top, I realized, what's best for Hashem? What's best for my master? What will most help him increase the love that he can bestow upon me? There's already rumors flying left and right. If I go and I tell the individual what really happened, there'll be more rumors and more Chilul Hashem, and it'll be an even bigger disgrace to the Jewish people. So you know what? It's best for Hashem if I keep my mouth shut. And he never said another word about it. Said the Sadei Chabad, from that moment when I started putting what Hashem wanted first, I felt a closeness to Hashem that you can't believe, and I never forgot another word that I learned. David HaMelech talks about being an Eved Hashem. That's what it means to be an Eved Hashem. On Shavuos, we talk about making Hashem the king. Hashem is the king. In order to be a king, you need subjects. We're the subjects. The subjects are supposed to serve the king. We serve Hashem in order that we can become closer to Him, and that we can feel a connection to Hashem, and that we can experience the love and the chesed and the kindness and the goodness that Hashem wants to bestow upon us. And the way we do that, the way we become closer to Hashem, is by using our avoda of Shavuos. It's not matzah, it's not chametz, it's not lulav and esrog, and it's not sukkah. It's what David HaMelech says in Kapitel Yud Tes. It's appreciation. It's appreciation of that which Hashem does for us physically and that which Hashem does for us spiritually. That's what brings us closer to Hashem and makes us an Eved Hashem and allows Hashem to come closer to us and us to come closer. So there is an avoda on Shavuos. It's just not an avoda of waving things around, and it's not an avoda of eating two kezesim versus one kezesim. It's a avoda of appreciating the world. So David HaMelech sat down and he said, this is how you appreciate it. Look at what Hashem does for you physically. Look at the world He's created. Look at the Torah He's given to you. He gave from Himself to you. You appreciate that, you do the avoda of Shavuos. I think now we can understand why the Vilna Gaon said that this is a good kapitel to read on Shavuos. And Mirtz Hashem, when we come to Shavuos, we should be able to do this avoda. We should be able to appreciate that which Hashem does for us, both physically and spiritually. We should be able to come closer to Hashem. We should be able to see that metal scraped off and the silver underneath, so that this Mirtz Hashem will be the last Shavuos we ever have to spend in Gullis, and that we should be able to see the Beis HaMikdash, we should be able to see Mashiach, and that we should be able to see truly all of Hashem's chassadim towards us.
Wow.
Are there any? I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. No, first I have to thank you. That was awesome. Wow. You really explained to Hillel well. That was really, really good.
Only 149 more to go.
Okay, no problem. Really good. Wow, beautiful. Ladies, do you want to tell Rabbi Vinitsky yourself how wonderful it is?
That I am going to say Shabbos thing.
One second. Who's talking over there in the back?
One second. I just found here. I don't know where I put it.
Somebody, hello.
Okay, let me eat it right now then. Oh, I want to just tell you, we should pay this electric bill because it says here.
We definitely should pay the electric bill.
Okay, ladies, you can unmute yourself, star six.
I want to tell you.
If you have some news, we're going to have to.
Rabbi Vinitsky.
I'm paid.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Rabbi Vinitsky. I thought your share was fabulous tonight.
Thank you very much.
And, and the part that I especially like is we're making that analogy between the 19th bracha and the Amida, and also at the end of the Tehillim, where David HaMelech wrote
the computer that I can
the last piece.
Yes.
I just never thought of that analogy. It's quite interesting.
First of all, she said
I love the whole shiur.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I didn't understand something. Does that mean that there were at one point only 149 kapitel in Tehillim?
No, there were 150. Those two were put together, which would make down to 149. But there's another one that was split that we have together. So there were always 150.
But which one was the one that was split that we have together?
Later, that was. Oh, you're going to ask me that? I'll come back to that question. We'll discuss that. We'll come back to that question. So there are always 150. The Talmud counts 150 chapters.
Everything was so interesting. Wow.
It was
so
fascinating.
Right? Wasn't it fascinating? Like so many things that we had never heard of. Wow. Really, really, really beautiful. Just even going back to the original idea of like how people came to serve Avodah Zarah, just from, thanking Hashem, appreciating Hashem made the galaxies and this and that and the sun and the moon, and then later on forgetting that it was really Hashem who was behind it.
Right, which is because otherwise how can one understand how, one day they're worshiping Hashem and the next day they're not. Really, over hundreds of years, you can see how such a thing could happen.
100%, and that's just the layman.
And you know, maybe there could have always been, you know, a few unscrupulous people who took advantage. But even without that, even just, you know, innocent people, the masses, so to speak, who didn't really know any better, knew that, you know, we appreciate the sun. Well, the sun must do something for me.
You could totally see it. It was really, really, really beautiful. I had heard that this Parakatess is what, I heard the Barditchever said that this is what should be said by a chuppah. This is for Chasan Kala.
Yes, Chasan Kala do say this by a chuppah. We say this a lot of times. It's
the chasan, you know, whatever.
It's interesting, you know, and the chasan says it by the chuppah. I'll tell you something amusing about that. You probably don't want to hear any more of my amusing stories, quote unquote amusing. And that is, I had a Rebbe by Sander Shlita. Some of his books, and you know, people stand up by the chasana for the chasan, right? And he says, "Why are you doing that?" And they say, "Well, a chasan is like a melech, a groom is like a king." Well, the din by a king is you have to prostrate yourself fully on the floor, face down. So he always asked them why they don't do that.
I think you said that last time.
Did I?
I'm sorry.
It's one of my favorite stories. I'm sorry.
Remember, I'm hearing it, and where else could I have heard it except the last year?
Yes, it's interesting how in Tehillim there are some kapitalach that we say a lot all the time, and there are some kapitalach that when we get to, you know, we hardly ever say.
Right, there's some that are more, you know, they're in davening, they're in different places. When we
do the Tehillim Kulach, some people
like when we can't hear you. I don't know, somebody's slowing it.
Can you hear me now?
I don't even think it's your phone. I think it's someone else's phone.
Well, I think it's whoever's paying their electric bill.
Right. try again now. That noise is off.
When we do the Tehillim Mechulach, some people will pick certain booklets. I like to just take whatever. I don't like to take two at a time. I like to just take whatever comes my way. Like, I know that's what Hashem wants me to say tonight. It's just sort of like I get more familiar with the different books that way.
Some people who take
But I can't stress enough the importance of of learning Tehillim so that we understand as much as possible what we're saying.
Well, that's why we keep inviting you back. It's amazing. It's like it just opens up. It's just a whole new world. It's just, you know, even if you read the art scroll, you're just not getting this. You know, it's just totally, totally.
No, I mean the art scroll. I mean it's helpful.
It's
helpful, but putting the whole kapitel together. An English translation doesn't really help with that so much because the word, you know, David HaMelech writes sometimes in a very poetic manner, and you know, it's just getting the meaning down of what you're actually saying is sometimes, you know, an effort.
Yeah, I was really affected by the last year. Like now, every single time that I'm always concentrating as much, but whenever I remember to think about it, which is pretty often. I try and like think like, what am I supposed to be changing from this? How is it supposed to be affecting me? Where's the blueprint in this capital? And how is it like? Is it working for me here? So it's something that stayed with me very, very strongly.
Good, Baruch Hashem.
I've given over that concept of the blueprint. Also, I think it's an amazing concept. It really puts it all together. Like. It's really, really, really amazing. Ladies, I also want to tell you, after Rabbi Vinitsky's shiur last time, a lot of women asked me how they can get, Rabbi Vinitsky's shiurim, in what format Rabbi Vinitsky has it available. So I just want to tell you that you can download it from his internet site, www.chicagotehillim.com. You can download the shiurim. Rabbi Vinitsky is also going to start offering a subscription for $7.50 a month, which is really not a lot. Once a month, you receive all four shiurim for that month. If there are more shiurim that month, you receive that also, and you can pay monthly, weekly, yearly, whatever you want. And for $7.50, you get the shiurim that Rabbi Vinitsky gives to his Chicago Tehillim class. So,
$7.50 a week or a month?
$7.50
a month.
That's unbelievable.
We were figuring out over the last few days what the CD, the mailing, and everything would cost. So I guess if I were a bigger Baal Chesed, I would just donate all the CD stuff. But basically, to put all four shiurim typical month has four shirim. Sometimes there might be less, sometimes more, but month has four shirim. To put all four of them on a CD, put a label on it, put it in a CD mailer and mail it out, cost us around $7.
I don't think you're going to get rich on this one.
That's not the idea.
At least not in this world.
Not in this world, right?
Yeah, it's very good. So,
I mean, if you want to download them from the internet site, then you can download them for free.
In what format is it?
It's in an MP3 on the internet site, for those of you who are into that kind of stuff. And on the CDs, it'll be like an audio CD, you know, like instead of having four songs, it has four shirim.
Sounds good to me. So what's the website?
ChicagoTehillim.com. Not all of the shirim we have, I think, we have about 55 or 60 shirim on tape. I think so far about 25 are up on the website. We're putting the rest of them up soon.
Go back and check. For those who are internet savvy and know how to download and do those things, you know, because it's a height, so take it from the internet. But a lot of people don't have access, don't know how to do it. So Rabbi Vinitsky is...
Right. So I'm more than happy to, you know, if someone wants to, you know, pay for the CDs, we'll be happy to send them a CD each month, you know, with that month's shirim on it. There's a lot of people don't have the internet. The one of them is that I'm saying if you don't want to pay the $7, you can get it for free from the internet. Or I'll be happy to, or if you want to pay for the CD, we'll be happy to send you a CD.
I have to tell you, it's very exciting to know that this is available. It really is. I missed the last year. I only was able to hear it on Kol HaLashon, and I told Shandy, I said, this one I'm not missing. I've been looking as soon as she sent the email that you were speaking again. I have been like anxiously awaiting it, very very eagerly.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a real schus for me. And Nainu is a tremendous organization, and it's a schus for me that Mrs. Capel, you know, invited me the first time, let alone a second time.
Well, can we make the third, Sandy?
Oh, she's still there.
Shandy? Whatever. I'll tell her tomorrow.
Hello?
Oh.
Okay. Something happened to my phone. I got disconnected.
It happened to me twice already tonight. There's something.
Well, I suppose if we did Shavuos, the next thing we'd have to do is Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good. We'll definitely be in touch with that. Yeah, we're willing, ready, and able.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people out there. I don't want to... I looked at some of the things on your website, and you've had quite a number of what seemed like very interesting shirim. I was thinking of dialing in and listening myself if I can figure out how to do it.
There's a big world out there, but no, I think when you give the shirim, you get a lot of background material. It's not just the words. Like you explain to us what David HaMelech was going through, you know, what his feelings were. It's not just a little translation. That makes it very interesting. And Navi is so fascinating, and I don't know how many of us have really learned the Navi that we really know that much about David HaMelech's life. So,
you know, unfortunately, I mean, when I started, I thought I knew something about Navi, and I quickly learned that I knew nothing about Navi because the interaction and the depth of every, I mean, there are kapitulach here that are deeply intertwined with Megillus Esther and David HaMelech. We obviously can't go into it now, but there are kapitulach here that if it weren't for David HaMelech, there wouldn't be an Esther. It's fascinating, and the Navi is very, there's nothing in it, you know. Nothing is dry. Everything is very interesting. Whether it's you know, sometimes it's very action packed. Sometimes it's very, but everything in there is interesting because every player, Navi only brings in the things that are relevant. If it's mentioned in the Navi, there's a reason for it.
Navi is fascinating. The truth is, we really, really haven't done Navi on all the shirim. You know, it's not even just to do a parak of Navi. Just, it's fascinating. It's just
sometimes they have Rivki Geber does some Navi.
Oh, sometimes, yeah, we do somebody who does Haftarah.
That's her.
Right, and then she like for that Haftarah, she'll teach us the background. That's true. Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's excellent. I mean, if you really go through David Amelis' life, I'm looking for the right word to say, because whatever I say, fascinating, whatever I say sounds trite, but it's worthwhile, to put it that way. It's worthwhile to go through David HaMelech's life as seen through Tehillim, or even David HaMelech's life as not seen through Tehillim, because David HaMelech, even things that people know in general about David HaMelech, you know, are famous incidences with David HaMelech, and none of them are what they seem like. David HaMelech came as close to really achieving perfection in Ruchnias as anybody, you know, has come since the Avos. And, you know, how he did that is worthwhile.
And through studying Tehillim, you can really learn that.
Yes.
I'm assuming.
Because David HaMelech had hoped to be able to give all of this over to his generation, that his generation would, and he himself and his generation would rise to the challenge and they would be the generation of Mashiach. But when he saw that that wasn't going to happen, he realized that he has some way, he has to give it over to future generations, and that's when he decided to commit to Tehillim publicly. He didn't start actually singing them in the Beis HaMikdash until they brought the Aron back. You'd have to get into the whole history, but when David HaMelech first became king, the Plishtim still had, the Aron had been captured, and David HaMelech went and captured and brought it back, and once they brought it back, they started singing, even though there wasn't the Beis HaMikdash yet, because David didn't build the Beis HaMikdash, so the Levim were already singing, even though I keep saying the Levim were singing on the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. That's true, but they were also singing on the steps of the Mishkan before there was a Beis HaMikdash.
You know what? This might sound a little childish, but the little Medrash says on Shmuel, gives you, it fleshes it out a little. It gives it in story form, but it really makes it more understandable to me.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't
I'm not
sound
exactly
childish at all. I'm a big fan of the little Medrash says.
And so I really enjoyed a lot.
And we're used to hearing in Navi from like a halachic standpoint, and even sometimes from a hashkafic standpoint, but we never really see it from the historical standpoint of the rise and fall of Klal Yisrael, so to speak, and the lessons therein. And that's something that you don't find a lot of people. There's a Das Sofrim who published a commentary over the last 50 years where he really goes into the historical, you know, what would have happened at this point if this had happened, and he sort of looks at the whole rise and fall of Klal Yisrael from a historical viewpoint, but through a Torah viewpoint. I guess what you would call like a Torah historian. Very interesting.
Yeah,
also,
you know what? There's so much to learn. You know, it's like it's really like once you start, you just scratch the surface.
Does Anenu make tapes of the phone shirim available on their website or?
No, I just asked you to do. We don't do that. No, because I do through Kol Lashon. I don't know. We used to.
I don't think they have tapes. So they just have. You can listen, right?
Right, and you can listen. Now you could download their stuff also, like MP3. Like they have like the
kiosks,
and people, they say that you can, yeah, you can download them.
Are they also downloadable?
Not sure. I mean, I know that, I don't know that much about it, but I know Coalition, like they do have kiosks, and you can download their shirim, so I'm assuming whatever's on Coalition.
If they have something like that, you could put a link on your website, you know, if you miss last week's shir, download it here.
I could ask them. Yeah. I don't know that much. You know, not much about it, but definitely worth looking into.
Okay. Any other questions?
Right, lady. I know there are people on the air because I just checked. I have a way of checking, so I know there are people there. Ladies, if you want to ask anything or say anything, you just have to star 6 yourself, and you unmute yourself, and then we can hear you, and we would love to hear from you. Please don't be shy.
Rabbi Pininsky, how many years have you been giving your shiur on Sunday evenings in Chicago?
We are on chapter 61, so a little over a year.
So I was going to say, you know, your lecture was just so enjoyable and so full of information. I was just thinking, I foresee you coming out with a book one of these days.
That's very kind of you. I don't know if that'll happen, but...
Tina's going to be the first one to buy it.
Eventually.
You know, they have to have somebody else write it down. Like, you have Zeb Smith wrote books on what Rav Tam said. So somebody else writes it down, and it'll be from the Shia of Rabbi Benitsky as written by...
Okay.
I'm not volunteering.
That's very kind of you.
Okay.
Before we were doing Tehillim, we were doing Megillas Esther, and Megillas Ruth, which are also extremely fascinating. Megillas Ruth we did in only 6 weeks. Megillas Esther, we started after Sukkot, and we didn't finish by Purim, so I'm not sure how many weeks that is. But we really went in depth into the Megillas, because that's also something where the holiday comes, by the time you get there, you quickly read the Megillah.
Right.
But you don't really study it in depth. And there's tremendous, tremendous depth there about the relationship with the Hashem and Klal Yisrael, especially Megillas Esther, and Megillas Ruth. I mean, the Megillas Ruth, think about Ruth for a moment. Two sisters, Ruth and Orpah, and they come from royal stock, right? So they could go back to Moab and live in royal style, or they could follow this crazy woman, Naomi, who's going to go off and do some allegedly spiritual thing. So now we look, Ruth made the great decision, and poor Orpah went. If you were standing there at the time and you were the personal life coach for Ruth and Orpah, what would you advise them to do? Right? It seems like Orpah made a very logical decision. Go back to Moab. Right? If you don't have that connection to Hashem, if you can't feel it, she would have no reason to stay. She would go back to Moab and live in royalty.
Makes sense.
I mean, at the time, it seemed like that was the rational decision. It seemed like Ruth was the one making the crazy decision.
Right.
Now, we look back at it, and, you know, obviously we don't look at it that way, but at the time, if you were standing next to them, you would think Ruth had lost her mind and Orpah was the reasonable one.
Right. Right. Like, if it was your daughter and she was going off with this crazy lady, yeah, you'd definitely tell her to come home.
Yeah, but it's if you have that connection, you work on feeling. I mean, she saw the connection. And Megillas Esther. So after we did the Megillas, then we started doing Tehillim. Once we finished it.
You're also in Chicago.
The question someone asked me is, what are you going to have to finish the 150th parak? You're going to go back and start over again, or did I? You know what we're on 61, so see me when we're like at 140.
Right.
I'll
be here by then.
Because when we first started, we would be on like parak 2 or 3. Didn't seem like we'd get very far.
Any
other questions?
Really, Rabbi Vinsky, let me thank you. It was really, really amazing. The women
love
you. They are there, even though I know they're being very quiet.
Okay, everybody should have a wonderful Yontif and a wonderful Shavuos. Yes.
It's certainly going to have a different dimension now.
Right.
Or Hashem. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you.
Call to
Bye.
Hello?
Hi. We're still going to have it next week, right?
Wednesday night. I'm going to try to send out the emails and the faxes, you know, before. But next week is very good, very different. It's a woman who's had very severe back problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really somebody from the heart. And she walks with a walker. She has to wear a cane. And people come up to her and really are very not nice.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't go out with a walker. Like, why are you going with a walker? Like, because she's a young woman. And we're just going to talk about how we have to be careful,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we see people people who aren't married, people who don't have children. Like, just watch, really, the topic is just watch what comes out of your mouth, and that's what mm-hmm. she's going to talk about.
What's her name?
Pearl Bornfeld. She's a regular woman. I happen to know her. She's just a regular lady. You've heard her. She's come on. She's not on tonight, but you, when you hear her voice, you'll know. And she just, you know, and she's talked to different people who also have gone through life experiences, and the rest of us, not meaning to, but we make these little comments which are very, very painful for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be interesting. And I hope people participate afterwards. And, you know, and
right.
It should be good discussion.
I got some flyer. Is that from the that's from you?
No. How did you get the flyer?
From, it's Claire of, it's C-H-E-M-E-D, Enenu Tehom. And it was care of Mrs., what is it, Mrs. Merle, Finer?
Yeah.
Oh, is that with you?
Yeah, that's with me.
Oh, so I got a flyer in the mail. Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So will she always send me the flyer? I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. You'll call me tomorrow. Tell me what the flyer says.
Okay. Yeah, I will. All right. Okay.
And I'll let you know.
Okay.
Anyway, ladies, have a good Yontif. Have a good Shabbos. Have a good Yontif. It was a very good shir. I'm going to thank him. We're going to have him again. And if you are computer savvy, you can listen to his other shirim. And if not, you know, I asked him, it really was my suggestion. I asked him to make something available for us that women can buy his.
That's an unbelievable price. I mean, it's like so unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a really nice man. You know, he's not doing this for Parnassa, you know.
That was pretty clear.
Yeah, it's very nice. So it really, he's really, he's very interesting because he really knows the Navi. Oh, I'm sorry, that's me making noise. Yeah, I'm going to come up. He really, you know, because he knows the Navi, maybe we should do that. We have to get somebody just to teach us Navi. Maybe we should start like the beginning of Shmuel or something. I should really ask him, like, how to do it properly. But you need somebody, like, he's good. He really knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had, like, I don't know if anybody who's still on the line ever had Rebbetzin Zilberman, Alas Shalom. She was a teacher in Beis Yaakov, and she knew Shmuel.
Inside out.
In fact, when we were learning Shmuel, one of the things she did is she took Kapitel Ayin Ches at the end, talks about, like, B'nai Eli, and she actually learned with us in Tehillim the references to that, to Shmuel Aleph. Fascinating.
Well, I mean, Rebbetzin Kamenetsky told us when she spoke to us once that Tehillim is like the poetry for the Navi. Like, Navi is what happened, and Tehillim explains David HaMelech's feelings while he was going through these different instances. So,
I think just the exposure that we have to the depth, even though we're clearly not getting anywhere near the depth, but just to realize that it exists.
Right.
I mean, everybody knows that the Torah is like endlessly deep, but just to get a glimpse of what it's all about is truly
amazing,
enlightening.
Right? And I love that about him, that he really gives it to us. Like, it's not just what the words mean. It's really he's amazing. Baruch
mm-hmm.
Hashem, we found him. Baruch Hashem, he's willing to speak to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a busy man.
All right, thank you, Shandy.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, thank you, Shandy. Everybody have a good Yom Tov.
Yeah,
you too.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
Shandy.
Have a good
gentleman.
Have a good gentleman.
Thank you.
Thank
you for coming on the line. Thank you.
Good night. Good night. Bye. Bye-bye.
Hello?
I don't know why you don't know how to
answer. שלום. כל הלשון מפיצה תקליטורים, ובהם שיעורים במבחר נושאים, במחיר 2 שקל לתקליטור, מכיל 40 שעות שיעור, כמו כן, תקליטורי DVD המכילים כ-330 שעות שיעור. ניתן להזמין תקליטורים או תקליטורי DVD במשרדי כל הלשון 02-581-6622 או בכתובת דואר אלקטרוני cdstrudel@kohl.com. אם ברצונכם לפתוח תחנה להתנת נגנים או להפצת תקליטורים, תוכלו ליצור קשר עם משרדי כל הלשון. ניתן לקבל בדואר אלקטרוני או בפקס את רשימת השיעורים הקיימת בכל הלשון. לקבלה בפקס, הקישו 03-617-1111, הקישו 0 עם הכניסה למערכת, ולאחר מכן 5 ופעלו לפי ההוראות. לקבלה בדואר אלקטרוני, שלחו הודעה lstrudel@kohl.com. שיעורי כל הלשון נמסרים על ידי הרבנים במאמץ וביגיעה. אם ברצונכם לסייע לרבנים מגידי השיעורים או למוסדות התורה בהם הם מלמדים, תוכלו להעביר כסף ישירות לרבנים על פי בחירתכם. הוצאות אלו מוכרות לצורכי מס כהוצאות, וכן כתרומה מוכרת בכל העולם. תוכלו להתקשר למשרדי כל הלשון 02-581-6622 או להשאיר הודעה בכתובת המייל d.strudel@kohl.com. תודה וכל טוב.